In the next segment of the show today, we're going to spend some time with Napa County Supervisor Diane Dillon, who joins us now in studio, and welcome to the program.
Thank you, Barry. Pleasure to be here.
I think this is the first time we've talked in person on the show since I came back to doing radio a year and a month ago.
I think so, too.
I think we talked on the phone, but that's it.
Yes.
For folks who don't know who the heck you are a county supervisor, and you have been in this job now for how long?
16 years.
How do you like it?
I love this work. I love public service. I appreciate the opportunity to be engaged in it.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it difficult and annoying, though, at times? Don't you get fed up and you just want to say, why do I do this?
At times it's frustrating because government does move more slowly than a business model, but government invites participation from all, and no voice should be unheard, and it has to operate differently than a business. So, but that can still be frustrating when you just know what you want to do, mm-hmm. and even when all five of us at the Board of Supervisors pretty much have the same idea, there's a public process in which we need to engage.
Which is important.
Yes.
Despite the governmental problems we're struggling with at the federal level and often at the state level, there's a consistency and a groundedness in local government. It makes me feel good about the way things work around here.
I'm glad of that.
Yeah. So, all that niceness, no, put that aside. Let's talk about the issue that led me to get in contact with you a couple of weeks ago at the Board of Supervisors meeting. There was conversation about the compliance issues in the wine industry. You were quoted in that story, and I thought this is a great time to ask Supervisor Dillon to come on. Can you frame the problem for us a little bit?
Wow. The problem is that the challenge we have is that the wine business in particular, but I think this applies, the resolution we passed applies to all businesses, have had to change their business model as years go by, as consumer interests and trends and buying changes. And so that has had to change. But these businesses operate in the county, in the unincorporated area outside the cities, with a use permit that's very structured, that says you'll have this many employees, you'll have this many marketing events, you'll have this many visitors. And it doesn't accommodate the changes that are needed in business. In an ideal world, I think we'd have development agreements with people that said in 15 years we'll look at this and see what's happening. But we don't. And there's a lot of hurdles to doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So we enacted the Wine Redefinition Ordinance, WDO, in 1990. And people were issued use permits saying this is how you'll operate your business in the 90s, in the 2000s. And they've had to change that model. Coming back in for a use permit is very, very costly and expensive. And it's easy for people to have their manager change. They put the use permit in the drawer, and they forget that it said 10 employees, and they've just hired two more. So we have a lot of folks, and the number is unknown, but a significant number of folks who have gone out of compliance with their use permit. It's called code compliance, but it's really about use permit compliance, mm-hmm. as well as the county code. So what has been happening since the 90s is people would come in and say, oh my gosh, I need to change my use permit. I have been doing it this way. Please allow me to keep doing it this way. They would go through a complete analysis of the impacts of that. Sewer system, water system, all those kinds of things, traffic. And in most cases, be given a new use permit that allowed for that activity to continue into the future. The public's very unhappy about this. The public labels it forgiveness, and in part because while they're going through the use permit process, we don't require these businesses to fire the new employees, go back to the old business model. And so we finally have said, this is ending. Forgiveness is ending, and it's ending in the sense that if you haven't come in for a use permit modification application by March 29th, then if you come in after that, you are going to have to fire those employees. You are going to have to cancel that grape contract or whatever it was. I can appreciate why the public's been outraged about this in terms of real impact. I don't know that we have seen this in the way that it's been sensationalized in some places.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm not saying it doesn't exist, that there have been impacts on neighbors, but I'm really not certain. I think this is more a visceral.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be allowed, and you should stop it. And so that's what the resolution is about. We are stopping it.
My take on it would be, as you sort of indicate, that if you had 10 businesses out of compliance, whatever industry they were in, there might be one that's activities really generate a lot of trouble for people living near that business or interacting with that business in some way, driving on the same roads of that business. The other nine might be out of compliance and you'd never know because what they're doing isn't creating the impact. Is that an accurate way to look at it?
Yes. For example, I've had winery owners say to me, we keep track as we're required to do due to a variety of other laws, federal and state. We keep track of our production and our use permit says 60,000 gallons. And most years we're at 48, some years 55. One year we went to 63. Oops. And so it just happened. More product came in than they had anticipated. And so they're constantly watching that. They're going to go back to, you know, try to keep it at 55 or whatever. Did they go through the process of a use permit modification for that? Well, that's their choice. That particular owner said, I don't want to do all that. But it's easy to have a slip like that. I don't think those are the people we are interested in pursuing, if you will, for code compliance or use permit compliance.
Yeah. And the other comparison I'd like to think of, and I'm not trying to soft pedal this problem or suggest it's not a problem, but the comparison, it's important to sort of frame it for me in the mind. If you've ever been in the market for a home, and you start looking at different properties and structures, and then the real estate agent will tell you, well, now this addition was not built to code, or this was not permitted, and this conversion was not permitted, and this isn't permitted. That's very, very common, isn't it?
Oh, it's the vast majority of the cases we deal with in terms of code compliance are health and safety issues related to the addition to the house that didn't get a use permit.
Residential.
For which residential.
Yeah.
And the conversion of the garage and a bathroom added and electricity and plumbing and rent is being collected for people to live there.
Mm-hmm.
That is the vast majority of our code compliance, which isn't that interesting to people in general, the public in general, unless they're impacted. Often the way we find out about those things is because now there's five cars at the property instead of three from the neighbors.
Again, so a lot of it's going on. Some of it impacts people. Much of it doesn't. So we just kind of shine it on, and you don't see a reason to necessarily be compelled to get out there and look at every single property the same way you wouldn't look at every single business, regardless of what their industry is. So it just it addresses the fact that we all of us do this to some degree, that I think I can get away with this. Who am I harming by doing this, right? So there's a mentality there. However, there are cases where the impacts of someone's, let's say, significantly increased production is now going to mean a whole lot more trucks, a whole lot more equipment, a whole lot more activity hours. In some cases, it's now events. And that seems to be a real rub for residents who are close to these properties. Would you say that's the area that generates the most complaint and the most heat around this issue is numbers of people coming to wineries for events?
I would say so, and I would say that's why the term has been coined event centers to describe certain wineries is because of that. The other thing I'd like to mention here is that sometimes this is, as I indicated with the example I gave, unintentional, that two more people are hired, but the use permit sitting in the drawer said we should only have 10 employees, and now they have 12. those kinds of infractions, I'll call them, not using meaning the legal term, are what led to when we did a report a few years ago and planning department said 40% of wineries are out of compliance. That 40% represented any infraction. If you were supposed to have 12 guests a week, visitors, and you had 10, that put you on that list and contributed to that 40%. And when I was listening earlier to your statements about people looking at facts and truth and analyzing things, that 40% figure is often bandied about as, my gosh, 40% of the wine industry is out of compliance. Mm-hmm. But that 40% figure was generated by any single minute variance from the use permit. Mm-hmm. So if we really look at the impactful situations, they are not that common.
Yeah. All right. Now, we're talking with County Supervisor Diane Dillon. Our first effort was to sort of frame the problem. Next step is what is going to be done about it. So we're going to get into that when we come back after a quick break here on the KVON Morning Show, back right after this. Time now, 8:25. We're back on the KVON Morning Show. I'm Barry Martin. Our guest in this segment is Napa County Supervisor Diane Dillon, and we are talking about compliance. This is an issue that the Board of Supervisors has been addressing and will continue to be addressing. And as you heard in the first segment, there's a deadline in March for businesses that are out of compliance, and if they don't come to the county and start a process, essentially, then they may end up having to take away things they've built or reduce capacity of production if it's a case of a winery. What would you say is going to be the biggest category where people are out of compliance, where they will come and try to address? Is it a production? Is it production capacity? Is it number of visitors?
I doubt it's production, because most facilities were built to accommodate a certain production. Mm-hmm. So that's a little more difficult to exceed just by the nature of the physical structure. Mm-hmm. It probably is in the area of either employees hired because the business has changed to direct to consumer in terms of sales, or visitors. That's a guess on my part.
Mm-hmm. And logically, neighbors would notice the impact of more cars, more traffic than they would of additional production going on. That would be sort of invisible,
I would suspect. Yeah.
So the question then, as I framed earlier, is what now? What is the process? What will the county be going through with these folks who come in?
Well, we're asking that everyone submit an application by March 29th, and we realize that's a big chore for many people because of all the reports that are required that have to go along. It's not just a single piece of paper. It's about a 4-inch stack of paperwork and reports that have to come in with any application or the typical application. So we realize that that's a big step, but we've been talking about this for over a year. So this shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. They should have been working on this. Mm-hmm. And then we will process those in the order in which they come in. Because of our perceived inability, well, we can't process them all in the first week, we're not requiring that those folks who submit applications ratchet back to their use permit limitations immediately. The big carrot here is that if you aren't in the door by the end of March, and then you show up after that, or we find out after that, that you are in violation of your use permit or have a code compliance issue, we will be saying you are going back to that original use permit tomorrow, next week. However, legally, in terms of dismissing employees, mm-hmm. canceling contracts, there's a lot involved. There is potentially a lot involved here. We've done this before with people. When we find out someone's having a wedding, we've had situations where we've said, sorry, wedding's being called off if it was being held at a place where it wasn't supposed to be being held. Mm-hmm. Very unhappy brides. Doesn't happen very often, But my point is, we're not afraid to do what we need to do to enforce the planning law.
Yeah. A law that's not enforced is not a law, essentially.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are people who are pushing back on this approach. Are you getting some folks who are saying this is too much to ask, and do you really want to, you know, limit the county's tax revenues? Do you really want to have people laid off of their jobs? Are you getting pushback?
We had that pushback. Again, this has been in discussion. The resolution we passed last week has essentially been on the table for more than a year, and there was a lot of pushback, and we were resolved that we were moving forward with this. The pushback we had last week was from folks saying this wasn't enough and that we should lower the hammer immediately. I think the sense on the board is that you don't change a practice in which you've been engaged since 1990, or perhaps before, actually. I mean, 1990 is with regard to the winery definition ordinance. You don't change a practice in which you've been engaged and how you've been operating just overnight. So I think that's the sense on the board. For homeowners, for instance, we don't tell them they have to tear the bathroom out that they put in illegally. We tell them they have to bring it up to code. For folks with a use permit, it's a little different because the use permit was predicated on analyzing all the impacts of the operation. So we can draw a distinction there between those two activities in terms of saying you're back to your use permit.
Yeah. And I'm sure you've heard from the wine industry side that if we can't do direct to consumer, if we can't bring people to the winery, we can't sell the wine.
It's a pretty universal theme. I think it's reality.
And so what happens to the Napa Valley wine economy if a lot of people are forced into saying, well, we can't bring you in anymore, so we can't operate this business successfully?
I think the industry is going to have to that's an unknown right now. The industry is going to have to possibly go through a change in terms of its growth rate. Existing wineries are existing wineries, and we don't want them to go out of business. I don't think there would be anyone that wants any existing business to go out of, to have to cease operation. But I think where we're going to see that is in terms of the growth and how much we can accommodate. We need to be seriously exploring how we get those winery employees to their jobs. Anyone who drives up Silverado Trail or Highway 29 at 5 p.m. sees a series of cars with one person in each car. How do we, if we took every person in those cars, who also may be people working at restaurants and hotels in the Up Valley, it's not all about wineries. But if we took every one of those cars and made it, if we eliminated half those cars by going from single occupant to double occupant, would we have a traffic problem? We have to find, and it's not that the wine industry in particular has not tried, or in the case of Calistoga, Mayor Canning tried to, with a bus to folks take them out of their cars who were commuting in. We just haven't found that sweet spot yet in terms of eliminating that traffic issue, but I think it's possible.
It's not a unique to Napa problem, is
no.
it? Yeah. We'll continue talking with County Supervisor Diane Dillon in just a couple of minutes. It's time for a little break here to check up on some news and sports. Back in a couple of minutes.
Stream us live anywhere by visiting KVON.com.
8:42 now. It's the KVON Morning Show. I'm Barry Martin. We're getting into our final minutes on today's show. Quick check of the markets and traffic before we resume. Looks like the gains on Wall Street are maintaining. So far, we're seeing the Dow up about 1.3%, the S&P up 1.4%, and the NASDAQ having a big rally today, up 2% in current trading. The traffic situation at the moment, well, let's see, do we have any, we have an accident now working 29 northbound at Oak Knoll. This is something new that's just come up in the last few minutes. Looks like we've got a couple of vehicles involved and maybe one blocking the roadway. Appears to be a non-injury accident. Northbound 29 at Oak Knoll. Also reports of a non-injury accident. Looks like 121 at 12. Down around the Great Crusher, possibly, and that's about it for right now. Nothing else new on the traffic screen. 8:43 now. Let's get back to our conversation. Talking this morning with County Supervisor Diane Dillon, we've been focused on the compliance issues that the county is now addressing, with businesses having a deadline of March 29th to come to the county with a new proposal, I guess it would be, or a new approach. Is that applicable only to a business that knows for a fact that they have been out of compliance? Are you not asking every business to come and file something if they feel like they've been in compliance?
Oh, no. This is only to correct. They have two choices: to operate, pull out the use permit out of the drawer and operate under that use permit, cease doing whatever they're doing that isn't in compliance, or decide they want to come in and get a modification to their use permit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what needs to be done by Friday, March 29th.
Yeah. So if, in the example we used earlier, if somebody's has 12 employees but they're limited to 10 and they're now becoming aware of this and they go, I better check, and they check and they say, okay, sorry guys, but we're laying you two off, problem solved. You're not going to go back in the past and say you've been out of compliance in the past and now you got to pay a fine or something?
Or they could say we're going to rent an office space in Napa because those two employees are doing accounting and social media and they physically don't need to be here.
Mm-hmm.
In some situations, there are alternatives.
Mm-hmm. The question, though, is there any is there forgiveness for past out-of-compliance activities if someone comes into compliance now? I mean, you're not going to be investigating to see if somebody was out of compliance 3 years ago but no longer is.
I do not believe we are going to be doing that,
Unless you have a big stack of complaints.
Unless it was some environmental issue that was a...
Right.
That's why I can't say a blanket no, because it depends on what it was.
Right. That was a very broad question. All right. So I'm sure there are plenty of resources for businesses to use in contacting the county. Is this going through David Morrison's division?
The planning department. If you go to the county website and type in compliance, you should come up to a page with extensive FAQ, frequently asked questions, that should, with answers to frequently asked questions.
Yeah, that's helpful.
That should address concerns.
Great. So this is not a secretive process. It's all right there.
Not at all.
What is your expectation of the outcome? Do you think that there will be satisfaction among the people who have been complaining about wineries, particularly that are hosting events when they shouldn't be, having weddings, too many vehicles, and so forth? Will we see those folks satisfied with this process, or do you think the way things have been playing out in the past, where, yes, you've been out of compliance, we're now going to up your limit and let you stay where you've been, that's not going to make a lot of people happy?
It's offended people's sensibilities, which is different than their concerns about the forgiveness thing has offended that. So hopefully we'll eliminate that. But people are still concerned that we have reached some maximum growth potential. And that issue will continue, as always.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back and read the 1990 EIR for the wine redefinition ordinance, the reason they were enacting an ordinance was because people thought things were simply out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the same sentiment is being expressed today. And this action about compliance is not going to completely alleviate that concern.
Right. A lot of people point to the changes that were made, and I don't know what year those went into effect, but I believe it was during the recession, right? The changes that allowed for more events to take place, Well, that's the way it's interpreted.
It is, isn't
right?
it? But that's not so.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have about 3 pages that I wrote documenting this and on my website. Happy to share with anyone. The word food in terms of wine and food pairing is in the 1990 Wine Redefinition Ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a new concept. It was in the Wine Redefinition Ordinance, but the definition of ag that I think was from 1976, sitting over in another part of the code, was not changed to include, to incorporate that.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happened over the years, in 1998, the general plan had a definition of ag. So all these definitions of agriculture have had to come into sync with what was done with the Wine Redefinition Ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2010, in the height of the recession, we had folks coming to us saying, you've got to allow weddings, you've got to allow this, you've got to do this, you've got to expand it.
Because we're struggling.
Because we're struggling. And we, a majority of the board, 3 of us, said we're not going to go there. What we will do is refine the definition of what's allowed under wine and food pairing. Our goal was so that it would not become expansive. It was a recognition of what was already happening, but no one perceived as impactful in terms of traffic and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so the planning director wrote a companion guidelines, which is a great explanation. Hillary Gittleman, our then planning director,
yeah,
wrote an explanation of what this means, interpreting what already existed, if you will, and memorializing it. 2 of my colleagues on the board wanted to do more. 3 of us voted for this reduced version of what was allowed. But it wasn't to expand it. It was to clarify it. That was our goal, to clarify what could be done, what we thought was okay to be done under the Wine Redefinition Ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
The Farm Bureau applauded it, said it was a great step forward to everyone's greater understanding. And it worked great. Until a couple of things happened, the biggest one of which is we came out of the recession in 2014, and we had this vast number. We had so many more visitors than we'd had in the past, to some of which is attributed to the fact that there was no place to go ski because we were in a drought. So you spent your weekend in Napa,
yeah,
instead.
Yeah.
And the wine industry just blasted out of the recession.
Mm-hmm.
With the third factor being direct-to-consumer. I mean, there's a confluence of events that happened that caused this seeming explosion of traffic and hiring of folks to deal with all the visitors. It seemed like it happened overnight, but I think it was due to a variety of
yeah,
external forces,
yeah,
if you will.
That's a good description of a broader sweep, a longer time frame.
That's my take on it, yeah, as someone who was born and raised here, lived here all my life, and been pretty involved in, mm-hmm, land use issues.
Yeah, and things happen for a reason. They don't just spring fully grown. I guess the thing that I was going to get to in terms of that change in 2010 involved the word marketing, didn't it? Wasn't there an addition or a change in the language that events could, or that in the agricultural areas, marketing events could take place, and that maybe was not in...
That's in the WDO.
It is in the original.
The wording was slightly changed, mm-hmm, and again, I don't have it in front of me, but my take on it is the definition they wrote in the Wine Redefinition Ordinance is 30 words long, the, mm-hmm, sentence. The sentence was changed, so it was changed, but it wasn't changed in terms of intent.
Okay. It's good clarification.
I would invite anyone to compare,
right,
the two.
Right, and that's where the answer lies. Let's switch gears here for a second. We were talking off the air about a different topic. Thank you for talking about this compliance issue. It's really important.
Thanks for the opportunity.
The other gear to switch into was a conversation we were having about what you called PSPS, which was a new acronym for me. I'm familiar with what it is, but I didn't know the acronym. So talk about that a little bit. You've been spending a lot of time on this.
a lot of time spent on PSPS, public safety power shutdown, what PG&E is authorized to do, what we have seen them do in mid-October here in the upper Napa Valley. And the regulations are still being written about how they do that. They were authorized by the California Public Utilities Commission, CPUC, another acronym, to engage in that activity, because shutting off the power for 48 hours versus having a situation like what we saw in Butte County, there's no choice there. There's a lot of downside to the first, to the PSPS, the shutdown. So I've been hyper-engaged in the issue of what those regulations look like. How are populations affected, and how do they deal, vulnerable populations affected? And vulnerable populations can simply be seniors who don't drive anymore, to folks who are on respirators or battery-powered wheelchairs that they have to recharge, et cetera, you know, have special medications that need to be refrigerated. I mean, there's a variety of circumstances. People who can't stock 72 hours to a week's worth of non-freezable food. There's just a variety of circumstances. So that's what I've been very engaged in. So there's that aspect of the power shutdown, and no one wants to see the Butte County situation happen.
Right.
Happen here. So the other thing in which I've been very engaged is the struggle between the folks who don't ever want to see another tree cut down and the folks who want to see every roadway cleared for 25 feet on either side in case they have to evacuate in a firestorm. And all of these issues have been quite challenging, especially since November 8th, mm-hmm. when the Paradise situation. It's not a situation. It's a horrific event when the campfire occurred.
The other component of addressing this new abnormal, as Jerry Brown called it, is the communication component. And
yes.
I know the county spent a lot of time
yes.
on that. What's the current status? And if we had a disaster right now, would we be better able to reach everyone who needs to know?
We're better able to reach everyone, but the perfect system hasn't been created yet. We tested a system that is encouraged to be used by FEMA, by the federal government, the WEA system.
Wireless Emergency Alerts.
Thank you,
right?
Barry.
Yeah. I know that one acronym.
So we tested that in October, actually on the anniversary of the October 8th, 2017 firestorms we mm-hmm. had here. It was not a perfect operation. There were a lot of flaws, and a lot of people never received it, so we need to work more on that. The sheriff has put emergency signals on all his vehicles. It'd be great for you to have him here to talk.
We had him on.
Oh, great. All right. Sorry I missed that.
That's okay.
And we are handing out evacuation tags so that people know, so that we know when people have left, and we won't have to spend emergency personnel time trying to find if they're still at home to evacuate them. So we are much better situated in terms of communicating with folks in Napa and visitors, which is also a challenge. We have a lot of visitors who may not be familiar with how we plan to evacuate or alert people to a particular disaster situation. So we're much better off than we were a year ago, but we still need to work on it. Everyone should be signed up for NCSL. Everyone should be getting to know their neighbors, especially their neighbors who have some vulnerability issue. We need to go about our daily lives a little bit differently than we ever have before because of this new abnormal.
Mm-hmm.
The new abnormal is going to stay with us until our forests are thinned and are healthy forests, and we have eliminated the fuel load by which those fires can generate their own internal power and move football fields in seconds. We're going to have to live with this new abnormal until the vegetation, which internally has low moisture content left over from 5 years of drought, 1 year of rain doesn't do it. So that's just, it's how it has to be, but we can adapt to it.
Yeah.
And I think hopefully not have the outcome that we saw last month.
Right. I guess the word vigilance.
Yes.
Right? That's kind of where we all are now. I was just imagining some scenario where, you know, the visitor center could have, you know, like a brochure on, as a visitor to Napa, be prepared for the following natural disasters, earthquake, flood, and fire. Here's how to respond, you know.
It's a real challenge for our hospitality industry on which we have become dependent. City of Napa, transient occupancy tax, Yountville, transient occupancy tax. In their budgets, they are dependent on that. And we want people to know that they'll be safe when they come to visit. We don't want them to be dissuaded or fearful from visiting Napa County. And this has now become a statewide issue. Visit California is engaged in an all-new advertising campaign because of what happened, starting with Shasta and the car fire in July.
You know, and in reality, with no facetiousness at all, if you go to Hawaii, you will get a message from the rental car company, don't drive the car across the lava beds, right?
This is true.
That actually happens.
Yes.
So, you know, there are things that occur in nature that we have to be prepared for, and just because you're a traveler doesn't mean you're allowed to be, you know, ignorant of everything. You should pay attention. Where are you? Just like you'd watch your wallet if you're in Manhattan, you know. Probably a bad example. You probably get more pickpocketed elsewhere these days. All right. Well, we're out of time. This was really enjoyable. Diane Dillon, County Supervisor, congratulations on starting another term.
Thank you.
And keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity.